Hello, everybody. It's Thursday, April 18th. Chapo's coming at you. We're back again. And today, Felix and I are joined by our good friend Josh, a.k.a. Ettinger Mentum, to talk a little bit about the Middle East's only democracy. That's right. We're going to be discussing some of the history and nature of Israel's dozens of political parties. Josh, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. It's good to be back. This is a particular fascination of mine. Israel, for a country of like 10 million people, probably has about as many political parties like for every person. And they are all there's some like amazing stuff here. So I'm like really excited to get into it.
Well, but before we dive into the, like I said, the crown jewel of democracy, in my opinion, not just in the Middle East, but in the entire world. Really, it's a country that has much to teach us. I just want to talk about just a few things over the last week regarding our favorite ally. The first of which is we learned this week that Anthony Blinken's State Department has been sitting on their own internal reviews of cutting off weapons to Israeli military units connected to rape and murder. And keep in mind that these were assessments made by the State Department before October 7th. And he's been sitting on that for the last half year. There was another story about how also the Blinken State Department is, they just vetoed at the UN a recognition of Palestine as a state. And probably most unspeakable of all, have you seen the stories about how Israeli drones and quadcopters have been playing recordings of the shrieks of women and children to lure people out of their house to shoot them from robotic helicopters in the sky?
Yeah, that's something that literally, like, only predatory animals do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that, yeah. Like there are animals that, like, imitate the cry of, like, lost yeah. Like, pups and shit. So they can just, like, indiscriminately kill entire bloodlines.
Yeah, like, the most evil frog of all time does that.
Yeah. I mean, at least those are animals that, like, you know, they're in a situation where you have to eat someone else or you die.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't one of those. I mean, maybe I don't.
Yeah,
I don't know with Israel.
I mean,
but
it's just like obviously there is a big sit-in occupation going on at Columbia University right now. A lot of people are getting arrested, but like, yeah, it's the quadcopter story because like I've said before on this show that I feel like every week I just see or learn about something that was like previously unimaginable to me, and this is like really. Playing the shrieks of children to lure people out of their house to like in expectation of helping a injured child only to be shot by a robotic helicopter is a level of hell that I previously couldn't have conceived of. But all of this is to say, like, Israel, our favorite country in the Middle East, really does seem to be a government and nation of serial killers. And like, this is really it's being brought into sharp focus now. And like, I think it behooves us to consider some of the history of this country. And Josh, I want to begin because in preparing for today's show and going over the notes, like beginning in 1948 to the present day, it does seem like the government of Israel has been in sort of like a tug of war between the secular side of its politics and the religious, like the incredibly religious, like sort of Jewish zealots and the people who don't want a secular society. But the catch here is that the secular side and the religious side are both 100% dedicated to Jewish supremacy over everything else.
Yeah, it's like the 2004 2004 Republican primary for like 70 years. Like the most progressive this country has ever been, it's been like the Wesley Clark campaign, and then everything else is just basically like the most like regressive shit imaginable. But they have elected a lot of Wesley Clarks, and that is enough to like keep the hearts of liberal Zionists full for like up until the present day, surprisingly. If you saw like that Vox article that said like liberal Zionism is back, it's crazy, but it is now. They brought back all the generals back to life and they're going to save everything.
So like beginning, it's basically like for the first half of Israel's existence, basically, it's been ruled by a labor coalition and a labor alignment. Josh, can you explain the difference between like the original Labor Party of David Ben-Gurion and then the later, I believe it's called MAPI, the sort of labor alignment of like Golda Meir and Yitzhak Rabin?
Yeah, that's so both are actually existing socialism. Communism has only been successfully implemented in Israel. So that's the most important thing to like keep in mind here. But like really the political history of Israel for like the first 50, like 30 years or so is the left basically starts out like in near complete control, like the part, like the people and the parties that later become the Likud, which is like the last remaining major party and like dominant for the past 30 years, are like totally marginalized. They're considered like these extreme terror organizations. Like Albert Einstein writes like a op-ed in the New York Times, like calling them like fascists. And this is like mainstream sort of opinion back then. So like in the beginning of Israeli politics is sort of like communism versus like, I don't know if you know about like what goes on in Nepal, but it's basically like Nepal where it's like a two-party system with like communists and like socialists competing against each other. And over time that gradually fades and they have like kind of a more recognizable sort of left-right political system. And I'm not like super into early Israeli politics. It's very kind of straightforward. They're basically a one party state up until the 1970s. But they start off as kind of like just the Labor Party. And then they kind of sort of become gradually more and more centrist. Their political leadership goes from like civilian political figures to basically just generals and one really corrupt guy who's just sticks there for like 30 years. And it's this vain attempt over time where they become more and more kind of like moving towards the center as the right in the party just takes power. The more they have these conflicts, the more the country, like its identity becomes like revolved around militarism and like battlefield victories. And also this is an interesting part of it that a lot of non-Jewish people probably don't know about. There is a huge cultural difference between that exists to this day between the Ashkenazi Jews from Europe, which are like the Jews most people in America know about. Most Jews in America are Ashkenazi, and the Arab Jews who are from the Arab countries. And you would think that like the Arab Jews who lived among Arabs like their entire lives would be more moderate. But no, these people are like by far the, like the most reactionary and have historically always been that. So like there's this huge kind of like difference between the Europeans and the non-Europeans, which is like really intense from the beginning. Like there's a lot of debates like in early Israel over whether or not like the non-European Jews should even be allowed to vote. Like they don't think they can conceptually understand democracy. So like they're not just an apartheid state towards like Arabs, that like they're also like very racist towards other Jews.
Yeah, the it's always interesting to see like just outside opinions about like Israelis and Mizrahi population, because it's like a constant refrain for sort of very surface level liberal Zionism in America. Oh, actually, you know, these people aren't white. You know, if you go by what, you know, this census standard or whatever, but they, it, you know, elides the fact that Mizrahi Jews in Israel have probably provided the most comprehensive advancements to racism in the 21st century. Like, yeah, they're the only people doing anything new with it.
It's nuts. Like the Sephardim are also like that too. Like the Shas, like those guys are really cool. They had like the guy who wore like Cartier glasses, who was like
Ovadia, yeah,
so awesome, coolest guy to ever live.
Ovadia, yeah, Ovadia was he was like the head Sephardic like Orthodox rabbi, and his funeral was the biggest public event ever in Israel. And he would say things that previously only Jews in like poll memes would say. Like, he would literally go out there and make a speech where he's like, all Gentiles are cattle. They're meant to serve us. Anyone who isn't specifically a Sephardic Jew is livestock.
Yeah. If you're not from the specific part of Spain 1,000 years ago, you have forfeited your right to live. You don't have a soul.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. But I think that is interesting, like how like incredibly reactionary like these people who had lived in the region before and like among Arabs and among Muslim populations, because it sort of, it mirrors something else, you know, in more recognizable American politics, how the farthest right electorates, they're like conservative voters who live in urban centers. Because yeah, they have like a psychotic siege mentality that they're surrounded.
And also in rural areas with the most minorities. That's like been observed for like 75 years.
Well, let's go through some like the like a sort of a guide to the party. Don't be late to any of these wonderful political parties. And I want to talk about the current Israeli government, which is an emergency government that is like basically being maintained through the expansion of this war on Palestine and perhaps Iran. But beginning with the Likud party, which is translated to means the consolidation. And like, you know, if you even a casual observer of Israeli politics will be familiar with the Likud party. It's the party of Benjamin Netanyahu that is now basically has grafted onto itself like a lot of these even more extreme settler parties to maintain their power. But if we could just begin with like the main right wing party in Israel and like the leaders of the current unity government. And they've been the dominant force in Israeli politics since about the 70s. So, Josh, can you talk about a little bit about where Likud comes from and like how they have become such a dominant party in Israeli politics?
Yeah, so Likud originates from what was essentially like a terrorist organization in the 1940s under the British rule. Its big guy for like most of its early history was Menachem Begin, who has broken, I think, like it holds the all-time records for the most elections lost by anyone ever in history. But he gradually came, like he himself was Ashkenazi Jewish. It's actually interesting because Likud has historically always had like a base of support from Arab Jews, but it's always been led by an Ashkenazi Jewish person, whether that's like Netanyahu or Ariel Sharon or like Yitzhak Shamir or this guy. So they're like kind of philosophical origins are in revisionist Zionism, which is basically like the main philosophical current of Zionism now that is based around kind of like a place's settlement at the focus of like everything else. The idea of like taking like all of the land in the area are not even just that, like their original plans were to take all of Jordan and their like insane like schemes like to go even further than that. So that is like the main kind of, I think, the division in modern Israeli politics, really since at least like the 70s, is the people who prioritize settlements as a means to an end and the people who prioritize like the idea of having a more kind of pragmatic approach towards governing a real country. And Likud has always been on the side of like always been the main force behind the like kind of apartheid as an end in and of itself. The settlements is an end in and of itself. Like it's not like just about security. They would choose like they would sacrifice like their own security for the means to the end of expanding Jewish control, like through direct population settlements and the legal dominance over the Palestinian people. That is their goal, and that's like what they've always really been about. Like they've like shifted themselves a couple times, and as Israel's basically its trajectory is becoming more and more right wing. Likud has become only more and more dominant with time, absent corruption scandals that have happened recently. But basically, all the parties now are kind of oriented around them in some respect or another.
You said it was like its predecessors was the revisionist Zionist party. I'm looking for like, what does revisionist Zionism mean? What is revisionist about it? Is it just this project of greater Israel rather than the sort of like more labor influenced sort of kibbutz idea about what Israel is supposed to be?
Yeah, basically. It wasn't a party. It was like it was a philosophical current. And it was a minority like during the early days. Like these people were not popular initially. They're like, this was like the mid-20th century. There were tons of like labor parties were ascended pretty much everywhere. That was the case there too. But like even to like, it's like the idea that like there's this big break between a Ben-Gurion and like a Begin can be overstated. There was a lot of what Ben-Gurion did where a lot of his socialist kind of appeals were just meant to kind of prevent a different socialist party that wouldn't have been led by him from coming to power. But basically, like, it's a pretty straight line. These guys were like gadflies at the beginning. Israel becomes more and more and more right wing, just increasingly so. That's like the common trajectory for the country. They take power about midway through. And now everything is either like, I like them, they're not far right enough, or like they're too corrupt. And that's basically what every party in the spectrum is now.
So to move on to one of the other parties, the Shas party, which controls 11 of the 160 seats in the Knesset. Shas is an acronym for Sephardic Guardians, and the full name is the International Union of the Sephardim Guardians of the Torah. This is an ultra-Orthodox party that, as you mentioned earlier, caters to the Sephardic and Mizrahi populations of Israeli Jews. How would you describe this political party and its leaders?
This is like where you get to the really fun part of Israeli politics, where you have like entire parties that make up like 20-30% of the parliament that are led by like 100-year-old rabbis from like a swamp in like Spain or like Lithuania to this day. Like this was the Odaiva party This is like, they have like incredibly consistent support. They are the parties of and only of the ultra orthodox like populations in the country. They always have the same seat numbers. They're always like at the same level of support. The only like comparison you can make in the United States are like those areas in Brooklyn that are like 100% Orthodox that like vote for whoever their rabbi endorses. That's basically how it works here. These are like led by religious figures. They're literally theological parties. There's not really any comparison, any modern Western democracy to like this kind of party with this kind of constituency. And they're really cool. They were basically led by Odiva, who was like the, and surprisingly, like for all we said about like Odiva and all of the, his many amazing statements where he basically said, like, we don't do the protocols, but we should. They were historically kind of a moderate force in Israeli politics. Like they are kind of like more like they're not like hardline, like economically conservative. And they've been willing to join like in governing coalitions with basically with whoever has won the election. They have historically joined, but like now they're just part of the right wing coalition. That's the same for like the United Torah Judaism and like the National Religious Party. Like just her redeem people, like the people who built the tunnels in New York, they're like doing that and they're voting for these guys.
Yeah, there is the United Torah Judaism Party, which controls 7 seats in the Knesset. Then there is National Religious Party, and my favorite party, the party that is most dedicated to eradicating secularism, is the Gnome Party. And this is just like, I know Felix jokes all the time about like Israeli political parties called Good Morning. But Gnome translates to pleasantness, the pleasantness party. And it seems like the pleasantness party, their main platform is keeping women out of public spaces and stopping the education of women. And like, Josh, this gets to this thing where it's just like, to the outside world, or certainly to if you're Palestinian, the differences between any of these political parties make no fucking difference. Like, it's nothing. Like, all of these parties are dedicated top to bottom into the total subjugation of anyone who happens to not be Jewish within the borders of what they conceive of as Israel. But within Israeli politics itself, it just seems there is like bitter enmity between Jews who want to teach women to read and those who don't. So, like,
yeah, it's intense.
Yeah.
They had 5 elections over the course of like 4 years, only a couple of years ago. These divisions are like extreme. These guys have like a level of political polarization that can only really be matched by like what happens here in the U.S. Like they could not form a government for like 4 years straight. Like they had election after election after election. Like there's just insane enmity between these different sides. They view it as like this very existential fight, which like to an extent other than Netanyahu, it's true. But it's like it's really like what fascinates me about it is that they have like the like a level of like kind of like tension and like polarization and like enmity that's like Weimar Germany levels. But like the politics is just like a 2004 like Bush v. Lieberman election. The differences are very, very small. And like they always like all of the non-Netanyahu parties are always like really funny. They constantly switch between who their leader is every couple of years. They've really gotten into running like generals recently. They have like an entire party that's just currently the one leading in the polls and is very likely to form the government. I like made like a post about this a couple of weeks ago where it's like the Concerned Israelis Association, CIA, where it's just like the deep state party. And this is like the most popular organization in the country right now.
I mean, obviously, like this belies a lot of the liberal Zionist propaganda about what a tolerant and progressive country Israel is, because, yeah, there are major political parties that are just purely religious organizations dedicated towards, I don't know, putting gay people into a barn or something and spitting on women who show their ankles in public. But there is a weird outlier here in one of my favorites of the center right parties, the New Hope Party.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a party whose former Likud politician is at the head of it, and like their line on this is that they're standing up for they propose bills to jail employers who fire pregnant women and to ban cosmetics testing on animals, and they are also proposed to legalize cannabis and amend surrogacy laws that discriminate against LGBTQ couples.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, they're a real niche here in Israeli politics, the New Hope Party.
Yeah, these guys are like, I kind of see them as a mass psychological delusion effect, where obviously the main issue in Israeli politics is and has always been Palestine. But during the 2010s, like after they created the Iron Dome, like the kind of perception within the country that they really, really wanted to believe was that this was a settled issue. So like once you have that as a settled issue, they're like, oh, I guess we have to care about normal political stuff now. Like we have to like vote for parties that are focused around economics. And like this is so they started creating those like kind of under the idea like, well, we don't want to talk about Palestine anymore. That's a solved issue. And then like but the only stuff that they can like figure out for what their centrist economic policies are supposed to be is like, oh, let's just like make it so you can't like lipstick on monkeys.
Yeah, once Palestine is a settled issue, we can get to real things like legalizing weed, man.
Mm-hmm.
How close are they doing that to in Israel? Is Israel a free country yet where you can smoke in public? Or
no,
is it? Yeah,
it isn't. However, Rovember has come to Israel. Abortion is legal there, so they are halfway free.
I'm just going through. Okay, like then there's another one. Always good when you have a Jewish power party. This is mm-hmm. the party that is the successor to Meir Kahan, the American rabbi and terrorist. Jewish power. You can. I like this party because it just makes explicit what every other political party in Israel stands for. They just say mm-hmm. it, which is Jewish supremacy.
Yeah, this is great. I appreciate these guys, not just because they kind of show the true face of what their ideology is, but because they are led by like the most like disgusting looking man in the history of the planet.
Ben Gavir.
Yeah,
he's like a Wojak of himself.
yeah.
It's crazy. Every picture of him I've ever seen, it's like someone drew him while they were in an argument with him.
Yeah, he's getting like all like the Al Jazeera photo editors like promotions. He's making their jobs really easy.
Every time I see a photo of him talking or giving a speech, he just sort of recalls the image of like a python unhinging its jaws to swallow like a lamb or something.
Yeah, he looks like Arab Peter Griffin.
I mean, like you talk about sort of the cultural politics of some of these far right parties, but like I remember seeing a photo of Ben Gavir from years ago where he brought farm animals to a gay pride parade to make the comparison between gay people and goats. Essentially,
yeah, they started their own counter protest to pride parades called beast parades, and they just would parade parade animals through the streets and be like, "This is what you are."
Maybe he was trying to say gay people are the goat.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah,
he said they're going beast mode. Yeah, but it annoys me when like the other really far right guy, Bezalel Smotrich, like is arguably more influential because he's a finance minister and does like all this other stuff, and he's been around longer and is like a more close part of the political establishment. And that annoys me because he's evil, but he doesn't look like Ben Gavir. It's not nearly as funny. He's just kind of like this beady eyed kind of like evil looking gnome creature. Well, like Ben Gavir just looks like an actual cartoon character. He looks like he's like from Big Mouth or something. It's very one of the few enjoyable things from that country.
So I want to go back to the pleasantness party because I love a political party dedicated to pleasantness. But then like reading about it, it's like, they only hold like what, one seat? And it seems to be basically the political project of one man who is dedicated his entire life to being against Reform Judaism and like women being in public.
Yeah, he's really crazy. He blows up Audis. He's like very.
Wait, why does he blow up Audis?
That's the religious vehicle of Reform Judaism.
Wait, sir.
I mean, kind of, honestly. Mm-hmm. I see
they're good
where,
cars.
Like, it's between that and the Volvo.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, but, mm-hmm.
Yeah, he tows them off the street. Yeah.
And then, like, I mean, another thing from the National Religious Party, one of the party leaderships is a former IDF helicopter pilot who compared Jewish intermarriage in the United States to, quote, a second Holocaust.
Oh, yeah, they hate that shit. Another Ben Gavir fact said he was like a pro bono lawyer for like an organization like dedicated to stopping intermarriage. They get so mad about it.
How do you stop that? Like, I mean, I don't get it. Like, what is the plan here to stop Jews from marrying goys in the United States, or to eradicating sort of secular Reform Judaism in Israel? We're like, how does that break down? Is like half the country like Reform Jew, or like more than that? Like,
I don't know if they have any Reform Jews in Israel. It's like mostly just like Orthodox Reformism. I think is mostly an American thing, which is why we're the best.
Well, I guess like I don't know, like secular. I mean, like like I said, like the split between the people in Israel who want women to learn how to read and those who don't. Like, how does that break down?
Well, that was like the big argument, like between like that was why they had four elections straight, and they eventually like it was like some weird ass shit. Like in 2021, they had one result where like they ended up creating like the Biden Liz Cheney ticket type of coalition, where it was every single party in the country was able to form a government, like every single party that was not Netanyahu or the religious parties. It was like far right secularist parties that called themselves fascist. There were Islamist parties. There was the Labor Party, the progressives, like the CIA centrist types. And that was like their coalition for about a year. And it was led by like Naftali Bennett, who is just basically an American like Silicon Valley software guy, whose recent idea for the state has been they need to be the Spartan Silicon Valley. That's his like vision for the country.
Well, they got one aspect of Sparta down pat. I'll give them that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we haven't talked about this one yet, but the National Unity Party, this is a Benny Gantz's party. And I guess this party is important to talk about because like now that public opinion has turned so sour on what Israel is doing to Gaza and Palestine right now, Netanyahu is, of course, like the scapegoat. Like it's Netanyahu's evil right-wing government. And Benny Gantz is the guy that people in America, when they talk about like, oh, who should be the next the next prime minister of Israel, it's always this guy, Benny Gantz. And once again, like it goes back to this idea that there is like functionally no fucking difference between Benny Gantz and Benjamin Netanyahu. Insofar as they're like their public presentation to the rest of the world.
No, there is one. Netanyahu is arguably less hawkish.
Okay, yeah. So that is in what ways? Like, so who? Talk a little bit about like who is Benny Gantz and like where does he come from? And talk about the great hope for the Zionist project represented by his National Unity Party.
Yeah, so like he fits within this great Israeli political tradition of just like running Wesley Clark every single year for a very long time. Like a lot of Israeli like prime ministers were generals, like Yitzhak Rabin, Ariel Sharon. Ehud Barak, like they love electing their generals. They're like Trump talking about like the central casting general guys, but like at a countrywide scale. So Netanyahu made his big comeback in Israeli politics in 2010, but it wasn't like a complete victory. He had to rely on some big tent coalitions. That's mainly the whole reason why there were those 2014 negotiations between him and Kerry and Abbas that went nowhere. He had to like do that for appearances for his partners. But after those negotiations fail, he calls a snap election in 2015. And the big thing there is like, you have to give me a proper right-wing government. You have to like give me full control and I'll prevent a Palestinian state from ever existing. And he wins that election. It's a big kind of shock victory. The polls expect it to be a lot closer. And that's really the last he's running, competing that year against the Labor Party, which is really the last time the Labor Party is a relevant national force there. So he wins a decisive victory. The Labor Party really has kind of lost its purpose past that point. Like the part, like politics is really in flux. Israel is very well known for like their, like especially in the 21st century, rapid shifting of political parties. Like I think in that Netanyahu was a victim of that as well. I think in the mid 2000s, his party nearly had as many votes as the Pensioners Party. There's tons of like spring up and like politicians shifting allegiances all the time. Like the fact that a new party comes in to be the new opposition to Netanyahu isn't necessarily new. They had constantly had people change, like as like the main figurehead against them. For the record, the guy in 2015 who ran against Netanyahu did the big opposition, like the great last hope of Israel, like labor Zionist or liberal Zionist. If you listen to guys like Tom Friedman at the time, was Isaac Herzog, who is currently the president of the country, who you've probably seen a lot during the war. Like trying to do his PR tour for the country, like across the planet, that was like the big moderate force. But he is mostly replaced as the opposition leader by Benny Gantz, who was the former chief of staff of the IDF, like another, like one of these big generals. But instead of joining the Labor Party, like as these people had historically done in the past, like with and done so successfully, he starts his own organization that's really like kind of staffed by him, other generals, other IDF staff members, and other like kind of more like centrist politicians. It could generously be described as centrist. It's more accurately just center right. And this is really the point where you reach like an instance where like the only disagreement between these two, him and Likud, is just number one, like completely inscrutable intersigned religious stuff about like the drafting of Orthodox Jews who like never don't want to serve in the army and like will have had massive fits about that. And basic kind of like the way you would manage the occupation. It's like the debates like that would happen like in a military conference, but on like a national scale. And Netanyahu's coalition, like his big right-wing coalition, faces big divisions over like basically like the right to teach women how to read. There are right-wing forces that are just regular secular nationalists who are really in favor of getting the Orthodox to enlist. Then there's the Orthodox parties themselves that are very much against that. His coalition breaks up in the late 2010s over this. And so like the politics of the country are kind of really scrambled at that point because a big thing to remember in Israeli politics is that like about 12 to 15 seats every election go to Arab or like communist parties. And those parties are basically not allowed to form a government, like nobody will work with them. So there's always a risk of any cycle that you can just have a hung parliament where neither side can get to a majority. And Gantz was like the leader of the opposition for Netanyahu during those first couple elections. They can't get anything done. I think they have one in early 2020 that is also inconclusive. But then COVID starts that year. So they're like, oh, we can't like not have a government during COVID. So Gantz and Netanyahu create like a unity government where they just get the country through COVID and do basic bills for that. That tanks Gantz's popularity with the anti-Netanyahu sector. So when they have a new election in 2021, he is kind of his party collapses and he's superseded by Yair Lapid, who is a civilian, not as military oriented centrist figure. And just by centrist, I mean, all these people are in favor of the genocide in Gaza. They've been bloodthirsty about this. Gantz himself, it was recently reported, was in favor of striking back Iran after their big barrage of missiles last week. Netanyahu actually opposed that. He has a tendency of being more cautious than a lot of the military figures in the country are, which is always an interesting thing to keep in mind if you want to be a real Israel head. So their government collapsed again following that. In 2021, Gantz's party falls apart. They have that weird like ramshackle coalition of like the centrists and the Islamists and the socialists and everything. That coalition predictably falls apart too. Netanyahu just wins the election. But at that point, Yair Lapid is the leader of the opposition. Things happen over the course of Netanyahu's like very far right, like solidly religious government that caused Gantz to take back a polling lead. And after October 7th, he immediately springs into a huge lead. And that's dwindled a little bit, but he's still like the odds on favorite to be the next prime minister whenever they have an election, which could be until now, until like the late 2020s.
Just keep in mind that the more elections your country has, the more of a democracy it is. But I want to go back to a very controversial issue that could be explosive. The conscription of Israel's Orthodox population, because obviously like if your job is to just study the Torah all day, you don't want to be in the fucking military.
And you can't.
Yeah.
You're doing the shit they did in Pi. Like you got better shit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Josh. I saw someone who was like protesting this. It was like they did a meme and they were like, you know, an IDF soldier. They were like, he is able to conquer because we spend all day studying the Torah. It's
yeah,
just
that's
like
true.
No victory without the Kabbalah.
Yeah, they're the support class of Israel.
They are.
They're like off in the corner somewhere giving the IDF XP buffs. Where do you think the IDF's double XP weekend came from?
Yeah, exactly. They would never have gotten the DLC without them. It's like completely ungrateful. But yeah, so that is like the big issue with them. So you have like basically this 20% of the country that like still lives like in a medieval style type of social circumstances. They are like basically like massive. They don't work. They don't like do anything. They just like just hang out like in their little religious communities and are on welfare.
Hey, spitting on nuns is hard work. You got to you gotta drink a lot of fluids. You got to stay spry on your feet. When you see a nun or an Orthodox priest anywhere in Jerusalem, you got to. Really, really give it your best.
Yeah, it's a full-time job. So there's a big conflict from, like, it's kind of like the conception, like, of what the country should be. Like, do we want to be this religious state or do we want to be, like, this kind of just regular hardline ultranationalist state? And the ultranationalist faction, which, like, includes a lot of, like, the civil and military, like, kind of establishment, wants these people to be in the army. Because when you're in a situation where one group, like, usually, like, in a functioning country, like the United States, you have the poorest and least productive people often fill up the military so they can do whatever the country wants to do. And like the more productive, like educated, wealthy people can just sit back and do whatever. But in Israel, it ends up that like the non-Orthodox people who are like also the most educated and like the people who have actual jobs are also the ones who have to serve in the army. So whenever they get into a big conflict like this one, their economy takes a massive hit. Like, I think their GDP shrunk by like 20% over the last quarter. It's causing a huge issue for like the sustainability of like this, the war that they're doing, where like they've had to pull out a lot of troops because like they just have huge labor shortages. That could be solved if you had the people who aren't working to begin with serving the army, but they think what they're doing is more important than that. So it's a huge just dispute from them. This is why they had like I said, like why they had four elections in a row. And it's still like a bit, I was really surprised to see that they announced that they would do conscription a couple weeks ago. And I'm interested to see what happened as a result of that. Because if that's true, that would be a huge sea change. This has been a massive issue there for a long time.
I mean, you say like, I mean, that's very interesting about like how much of the workforce when they go to war, like, I mean, and the effect that has on their economy. But outside that, Josh, I'm just wondering like, okay, the IDF, you know, a military known for its world-class professionalism and discipline. Mm-hmm. You know, we've certainly been seeing a lot of that recently on the various, you know, panty raids that they've been doing and in service of this genocide. But like, why the fuck do they want these people in the military? It seems like a disaster.
I mean, why not? They're cool. They could teach them stuff. They want to know their lore or whatever.
I mean, wouldn't you want a tunnel expert?
Hey, where are Hamas? They're in the tunnels. So.
I mean, it's like, given what we've been seeing, it's not like the guys that they're sending out there, like, if they know how to read, it's not like that's doing them really any good. So I don't know if, like, if having an army of illiterate people would really, like, hurt them all that much. You don't really need to do math when you're just dropping dumb bombs across an area the size of Brooklyn.
Yeah, I think, like, actually, Golani Brigade would be ambushed less if they couldn't read.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you know, when Wile E. Coyote paints a tunnel into a cliff face and says, road here, they would just ignore that because...
Exactly.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, Golani Brigade, 80% of the headlines I've seen mentioning them are mentioning an ambush that they stumbled right into. I don't even know how many are left of those guys, but, like... Mm-hmm. Presumably, they're just writing, like, you know, women's underwear here, and it works every time.
Yeah. Josh, another thing you mentioned is, like the sort of the Wesley Clark model of running mm-hmm. generals. And, you know, I remember, and just sort of, like, especially among liberal Zionists, this glee about, like, hey, even our guys are hardcore commandos. I remember in mm-hmm. Steven Spielberg's Munich, there's one scene where he made very explicit to include a character introducing himself as they go on some sort of commando raid to shoot a guy in bed with Uzis. And he goes, hi, I'm Ehud Barak. But I guess But I guess I'm wondering is like, okay, America has had generals become presidents before. You know, you got George Washington and Dwight Eisenhower. But like, look at their records. Like George mm-hmm. Washington, like America wouldn't exist without him.
Ulysses
Grant as well. He won the Civil War. And then, you know, Eisenhower, Operation Overlord. He was in charge of the Allied forces in Europe. That's a good resume. But like, where are the dubs? Where are the victories? I mean, obviously,
Ehud Barak got groomed on Discord in the army. he famously like cross dressed to like do a bunch of assassins.
That's in Munich. They depict that in Munich.
Yeah,
I've never seen that.
He invented wokeness.
But what I'm saying is like, okay, Ariel Sharon is probably like most known as like, you know, being the butcher of Lebanon. But like that was
and also
disaster.
The fattest man in the history of the whole planet to ever live.
Ariel Sharon, after he had a stroke, there was like a big press conference in his hospital where his like, you know, whatever worm did his communications for his office was like, he's going to eat healthy now. This isn't going to happen again. And Sharon was literally eating an entire can of Pringles in the background. It's like scrubbed from the internet, but it's like, that saga was so funny. He had a minor stroke at first that wasn't publicized. And when he got out, he celebrated by eating like 9 pounds of sausage and a bunch of chips and everything. And that's when he had the more debilitating stroke that like pretty much left him a vegetable for the last years of his life.
Yeah,
he's such a funny figure.
It's awesome because like all of this leads up to like the great like kind of tragic moment in the history of liberal Zionism where like he was gonna like he was like the Nixon going to China. He left Gaza. He was gonna like leave the West Bank, and then like this all of this tragic like it tragically comes crashing down because he was basically like a giant oval and he stroked out and became a vegetable, and then he gets replaced by the most corrupt man of all time who like tries to like do like the peace process literally like by sketching out a map on a napkin and handing it to a boss of like, you want this?
Ehud Olmert was the Mayor Quimby of the Middle East.
It was awesome.
It was incredible. Sharon is like, he's hilarious in so many ways because there's a story that might be, it's one of those things where it's like, this may be like kind of a myth, but that's not really the point, about him in Lebanon, right? It was after that like 16-year-old girl famously, like, you know, suicide bombed an Israeli checkpoint. Apparently, Sharon's aide-de-camp was like, this was a mistake. We shouldn't have come here. Like, we have no idea what we've done. We've created like this incredibly strong enemy with like resolve that we'll never understand. This is going to come back to destroy our country. And Sharon was just like, no, it's not. Like, literally the Onion.
Well, I feel like, I mean, this gets to my point about like, where are the dubs for all these generals here? Because it seems to me it's just like, it's not so much about being leading a successful military campaign. It's about what people want is that you've blooded yourself for Israel, that you've committed massacres, not necessarily in a military victory or anything that like you could point out and be proud of. It's just sort of you've proven your capacity to execute enemies of Jewish supremacy.
Yeah, they have like 1800 style propaganda going on for these guys. I remember I was like speaking to like this Israeli, older Israeli person. They like brought up Sharon. They were like, he saved Israel in 1973. He's a tactical genius. Like, he was like the savior of the country. I looked up what he did, and he just like drove like all of his troops across the Suez Canal and got ambushed. And that was like the victory that he built his political career off of.
Well, I mean, it's like these victories, like if Israel were any other normal country, all of these victories would have led to the utter defeat of the country. But like, because they live in this fucking hermetically sealed bubble of like unlimited U.S. support, like how they conceive of victories or successes is just, it's very skewed. And like they continue to act like that because they have like the cheat code on of unlimited U.S. support.
Yeah, I kind of get it.
Yeah.
Guys are the best.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, if I had the only functioning Air Force, like out of anyone we ever fought, I'd be like, yeah, no, I just put in longer weekends.
Yeah. I'm just like really good at this. I'm going to write books about how I'm like the best ever.
You did mention Abbas, who's like, you know, like the leader of the, you know, sort of comprador Palestinian authority such that it exists. But I did want to mention, I saw an amazing news article today about how the Blinken State Department like quietly pressured Abbas to not support Palestinian statehood in return and in exchange for he would get to go to D.C. and meet with Joe Biden and have his photo taken.
They literally did.
You know, like, there's not much good you can say about a boss, but like, what the fuck were they thinking? They're like, oh, yeah, like, in exchange for like the only reason you exist, because you just deny that, in exchange, you get to shake hands with Joe Biden.
They literally did $500. They did $500,000 for dinner with Drake.
And honestly, he went, like, let's say he said yes to that. You know what would happen is that he would fly to D.C. and then they'd be like, oh, Joe's tired. Here's Kamala.
Yeah, he can call you Osama.
In the event that he did like actually get to like meet Joe Biden. I wish it was like a thing on DraftKings. Like if you could bet like who Joe Biden thinks he is during their meeting.
Yeah.
Does he think he's the first King Saud from the 50s?
Yeah.
Does he think he's Marlon Brando?
He thinks it's the surviving members of ABBA.
Yeah.
I'm putting it along on like that he does a third straight a Helmut Kohl fuck up.
Yeah. You have to fuck up so bad to make Mahmoud Abbas look principled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you have to really blow it.
We've talked about the ruling coalition, but I do want to get into some of these opposition political parties, because this is really where like the translation of their Hebrew, the Hebrew names of these political parties are really pure gold. And I want to begin with Yesh Atid, which has 24 of the 160 seats. Yesh Atid translates to there is a future.
Yeah.
Oh, good news.
Yeah. Thank God.
Yeah, the other one is Israel, our home. So we're getting to like the caveman.
Yeah, yeah. Yisrael Betanu translated Israel, the caveman.
Israel good.
Israel yeah. fire.
Welcome, yeah. welcome to the home warm party.
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, we talked about there is a future and Israel our home party. Yeah, like can we talk about let's begin with the there is a future party.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so these guys like broke up from the Where Sun Go, the Some Come Back party. they had a pretty brutal split with them and like the Water Clean organization. Yeah, but anyways, this guy's like the biggest like choke artist of all time. He was the prime minister there for 6 months because he created like a rotating arrangement with like Silicon Valley Sparta guy. So he's like technically the leader of the opposition now. And this is just like a way of like, this is just kind of like a voters being dumb thing. But this is, I kind of feel for him a little bit because his big fall from grace from like where he's like the leader of the opposition to like, maybe if he get like a minor coalition partner with Benny Gantz the next time there's an election, is that like basically Netanyahu is trying to pass like the End Democracy Act that like everybody, like he was trying to pass Project 2025 in Israel that would get rid of the judicial system. And Yesh Atid was like hugely opposed to this. It was like they had all those protests you might remember from last year. Like,
sure, our startup nation. Don't end our startup nation.
Yeah, don't end up our startup nation, democracy for Jews now, like stuff like that. yeah. Yeah. So that was like they had a big movement and he was like, this is how I'm going to become like a big shot now. I'm going to be really opposed to this. But Benny Gantz went out there and he was like, we need to find a middle ground between these two sides that are being divisive. And like the public was like, holy shit, this guy's a fucking genius. How'd he come up with this? And his party surged in the polls massively. And that was why he was in the position to take all the gains after October 7th. But like, yeah, this guy's like one of the like ultimate like Ashkenazi Tel Aviv corridor type wine tract Israeli elitists, just like pro-democracy, pro a more efficient occupation. Pro will tell the Democrats we're going to do negotiations so they don't get mad at us. And like his moment really has gone. They want their beautiful generals back.
Moving on to the Israel Our Home party. This is a sort of a secular right wing party that is really it caters to the Russian exile, the Russian immigre population to Israel. So like, yeah, like that's their base of support. What can we say about the Israel Our Home party or just Russia not home, Israel home?
Yeah, exactly. Basically another one of those like kind of like personalist parties led by one guy, Avigdor Lieberman, American media darling. He has like kind of a soap opera type relationship with Netanyahu, where he once like formed an outright electoral alliance with him. Now he hates him and thinks he's fake as fuck, and like they're not friends anymore. And he formed part of like the governing coalition in like the weird ass rickety thing that they had a year ago, and he's very interesting. They have like a big like list of kind of contradictory policies. He's like he's one of those people who's like you need to kill anybody who throws a rock. But they also want to force all the illiterate people in the like the Orthodox to enlist in the army. That was like why he broke off from Netanyahu, because he couldn't like really work with his ultra religious people for much longer. He personally lives in a settlement, like he is a settler, like who lives in the West Bank. But like his party has always been cast as more moderate and like centrist, which I mean, I don't know. I don't think he'll make a reasonable deal with the Palestinians with this guy in government, given that he literally lives in occupied Palestine, like the West Bank itself. But this guy's near guaranteed to be part of the next like the opposition coalition in Israel, like if they come to power. There was one poll that came out right after the October 7th that showed that it was possible for Gantz, Lapid, and Lieberman to form a coalition by themselves. They aren't polling quite that strong now, so a coalition would probably have to include Meretz, who are like the progressive, like Elizabeth Warren shitlibs in the country. like voter base entirely of 80-year-old like Ashkenazi people who were like born in Polish refugee camps, who like the entire country hates and wants dead.
I mean, getting into these opposition parties, it really does like skew up like what we think of as like a traditional left-right split in democratic politics. Just like they're all united on just, you know, exterminating the Palestinians, but like, you know, like are there national like domestic issues that are debated, like things like obviously, yeah, do we teach women to read or not? They're sort of hot button social issues. What about things like taxation or like a healthcare program? Or like, is there any variation in what these political parties, how they would actually govern Israel if it were like a normal country?
It's actually quite interesting. Begin, like, originally was, you'd probably be able to accurately call him a national conservative. His concern wasn't really with like economic policy. He was actually kind of corporatist. He supported like all the more socialist oriented kind of policies that were instituted under Ben-Gurion and his successors. But Netanyahu, one of the big things that made him so unique, you could call him very thoroughly American in this respect, not just because of what he sounds like, is that he's a very committed Thatcherite, Reaganite, literally from that era. Like, he's one of those last like kind of literally 1980s international conservatives like still around, because he was very young during that period. But he was closely associated with the Reagan administration. When he came, like, under Sharon, he was made like the economic minister. And he passed a lot of like liberalizing neoliberal reforms in the country that are credited to like causing a big increase in like startup investment. You could probably more accurately ascribe that to low interest rates in the U.S., but like whatever. That was a big part of his comeback narrative. So he's like definitely like the more kind of American, like kind of style, like economic, socially conservative. There's not really any interest in going on like, oh, he supports like this type of left-wing social program. That explains why he's popular, even though he's right-wing. He's just a right-winger. And it's caused a lot of issues, like in his coalition, where he habitually has like kind of ministers or members of his party break off and form centrist sort of economic egalitarian movements that always end up coming back to him and governing with him. But like, I can't really say I know a lot about like what their domestic, like kind of, they kind of have a consensus around that at this point. They kind of resemble Europe more in like how like their social welfare state is structured. Like, it's just not like an issue in the country like it is here. It would have to be a totally different situation where I could be like, oh, this guy's the Bernie of them. This guy's the Ron Paul of Israel. Although, I mean, we have like seen statistically there are a lot of Ron Pauls in Israel that come from other countries for safe asylum. So,
and now I want to talk about, I'm told this all the time. But did you know that Israeli Arabs actually have their own political party that has is seated in the Knesset? So, I mean, honestly, apartheid state? I don't think so. Let's talk about the United Arab List Party, the Ram Party, the Religious Arab Muslim Party, and you know, like full rights. They're seated in government.
Yeah, they are Israeli. They are, I would call these guys properly Israeli because they do have another caveman name. Literally, their name is translated as Thunder.
Thunder, yeah.
So, yeah. So, yeah, another time where they saw something outside their cave and they named their party after that. Like, these guys were part of, like, the United Arab List, which was, like, the 15-seat coalition that kept any Israeli, like, government from being formed for a number of years. But, like, the big breakthrough, and they entered government for the first time ever in 2021. They've joined Lapid and Bennett's coalition as like a minor member. They were like four seats. It was like it was the first time ever that an Arab party has ever been part of a governing coalition in Israel. And ironically, it was the Islamist faction. So like, these guys are like very much kind of like, they're not like super involved in like the kind of larger Palestinian project. It's kind of like, we got ours, fuck y'all. A lot of their voters are just Bedouins anyways. But like, he's much part of the political establishment now. If like the opposition does like reasonably well, they could probably form a government with them, along with like the three main opposition parties, like Gantz's faction, Lapid's faction, Lieberman's faction, and maybe these guys, which would be a great like kind of moral victory for their incompetent propagandists. They could really try to push that a little bit, and nobody would really fucking care. But they could be very happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, I really wonder if, you know, like the Israeli Arab political party, like, obviously, the fact that they have five seats is like wonderful. We'd love to have you in our government. But anything past a certain point, I would hazard a guess that they would not be allowed to exist. I mean, like, let's keep in mind that like the entire reason for Israel existing is to like create a permanent demographic majority. So that they never have to have Arabs participate in their government. But five seats in the Knesset that's good enough. I mean, like, you know, for international propaganda purposes.
Yeah. And when the going gets tough, like if they have to choose between like forming a government, like when COVID happened and they really needed to form a government instantly, it would have been possible for Gantz to form. I think it would have been possible for him to form a coalition with his opposition movement and with the Arab parties, with like a confidence supply sort of thing. He could have totally done that, like with his back against the wall. If that would have been the thing to do. But he chose to work with Netanyahu, his supposed mortal enemy, and form a government with him rather than work with the Arab parties, for even considering that for a second. So I think that like just is pretty illustrative of your point.
And then let's talk about the one who's really a political party that I think is very worthy of our support in this fine program, the Hadash Ta'al, the Communist Leftist Coalition.
Yeah.
Real, as you said, real existing communism.
No, these guys haven't been in power. The Labor Party there is realistic socialism. These guys are wreckers.
Okay, are they trying to sell newspapers and shit?
Yeah. No, these guys are like really the only like actually.
Yeah, these are some real fucking losers.
Yeah, well, I mean, these guys lose, but like they're like really the kind of the only like arguably anti-Zionist force in the country. So they're just, I remember like one of them went on Hassan's stream recently, somebody like within the party. So they're chill. They're trying to get, like, they constantly, people try to kick them out of parliament, but they've never been in government. They never will be, ever. So.
And then finally, the Israeli Labor Party, which currently holds 4 of the 160 seats. I mean, wow. What a collapse.
Yeah. This is the saddest shit of all time.
This is rough.
Yeah. They're currently polling below the threshold for the next election. They will not exist, like, when they hold a new election. They will not have any representation in parliament. It will be over.
I mean, what accounts for that? Is it just like, have all of the things that they used to stand for just been co-opted? Or as Israeli society gets more militaristic, it's just like they see less of a need, or like they
all their supporters are dead. They were all old people. Now they're dead people. So,
okay, that's hard to have a political
that's
party.
That's what happened. Yeah.
When most of the people who support you were dead.
Yeah, they died.
I don't know if I'm missing any other political parties. There are so fucking many of them. But
there's Meretz, who actually they are currently led by an epic general who saved people's lives during October 7th. And that has accounted for absolutely zero growth in popularity. They are specifically being polled. Would you vote for the progressive, like, pro-two-state solution party if they were led by, like, this guy who did actual Steven Seagal shit in real life and, like, saved people's lives, like, in the Gaza envelope? People are like, no, fuck them. I don't give a shit.
Oh man, what a wonderful country, what a wonderful magical place that we're so we're so like privileged to live in the same world with this, like you said, the best democracy on the planet.
Yeah, political scientists have actually like studied this, and they have found that under an ideal democracy, your political system looks exactly like this. Even if you aren't Jewish, you have to have like Shosh and like the United Torah Judaism parties. Even if like you're like the United States, you have to have this. This is what a healthy democracy looks like.
Yeah. According to psychologists, countries that have more non-viable political parties are more intelligent, have better sex, and are more fun to be around.
Yeah. And you might even say that they might give Silicon Valley a run for their money.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anything other than the freaking Republicans and the Democrats, am I right?
Yeah. The duopoly is preventing you from voting for Odiva's party. It's fucked up. I write them in every year. If people ask me how I vote, I write in Shosh every year. I write in their entire list.
I want the fire party in this country. Just what do we stand for? Fire.
Yeah, where sun go, sun come back.
I mean, like, Josh, like in sort of summarizing the state of Israeli democracy, I don't know, like any final thoughts about like where this all leads? Are they going to have another election anytime soon? Like is Netanyahu going to like expand this war to continue this emergency government, or like will he get voted out in sometime in the near future for a guy who's exactly like him, but slightly worse?
Yeah. So like the big kind of like thing to understand about the war is that Netanyahu's continued, like the big thing, this is kind of like a movie set up a little bit. Netanyahu has been under investigation for like corruption for like 5 years. And the understanding of it is that like he would like as long as the trials when they conclude, he will go to prison. He was out of like power for like a year or so, but like the trials were still going on. So like he wasn't jailed during that. So like basically like his political career for the past 5 years, and the reason why he stayed like in charge of Likud, with like even though they kept on losing elections over and over under him, is because, like, if he steps down and he retires, he will probably go to jail. So that is a big thing to keep in mind while this war is going on, because he has a very solid majority with the emergency government, including the generals, like, in their seats and their parties, like, because the whole basis for it is that they need to have a stable government during the war. Once the war ends, those parties will leave, and he will be left with forced to contend with the ultranationalists like Ben-Gvir for survival, and they could throw him under the bus at any time and end the coalition. So the presumption a lot of people have is that once the war ends, there's going to be an election and he'll be on his way out. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, because there's nothing that's really forcing him to have an election once it ends. He'll still have the same majority he got elected that he won in 2022. So, like, I don't, like, conceivably, he could stay in power for until, like, as long as 2027. There's nothing exactly stopping him from doing that.
And remind me, what exactly are the corruption charges he's facing? What is he accused of doing?
I think he, like, bribed a news outlet.
Okay.
It's, like, very petty.
The idea that he would go to prison for bribing a news outlet, I mean, like, getting Al Capone for tax evasion is, like, really doesn't do it justice. I think that would be the equivalent of putting Jeffrey Dahmer in prison for, like, I don't know, stealing a DeWalt power drill.
Yeah, I'm trying to... What's the name of that, like, that motorcycle biker show? Like,
Sons
where
of Anarchy?
Like, yeah, it's Sons of Anarchy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I think we should leave it there for today. Josh at Germentum, I want to thank you for your this foray into the, like I said, the world's greatest democracy, and really a country that's better than America in every way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. The duopoly will never let you have this level of choice.
But Josh, if people want more of your stuff, where should they find your Substack?
Yeah, at Intermentum newsletter, as always, I have an article from last October that goes into more detail about the future of Israeli politics and the nature of the differences between Gantz and Netanyahu. I'll try to pin it to my page once this episode goes out. So that'll go into a bit more detail. It's a bit dated. I might want to look back to it, but I still think it's a pretty good overview as things are. This has always been like a special fascination of mine, so I'm happy to have been able to go with it with you guys.
Excellent. Do we have anything to plug? I'll just say one more time, May 4th at Littlefield. Come see Death Wish 3 with me and Hesse. Should be a lot of fun. All right. Till next time, everybody.
Bye-bye.
America is home.
Mm-hmm.